no more bad bosses, you know, all that type of stuff is what got me through the door. Yeah. And then the door closes behind you and you realize there's no door handle that you can't open it up again.
Welcome to the How Leaders Think podcast, a show that transforms you by renewing your mind and giving you new ways to think. I'm your host, Kenny Lang, and with me today is Tom Richard. He is the co-founder and CEO of Unlimited Tech Solutions. As an experienced sales executive, Tom has understood the importance of a high-performance RevOps stack. He began getting curious as to why there wasn't more innovation around the HubSpot platform for revenue operations. After a little exploration and meeting his co-founder, Corne Van Driel, he is an engineer and a solution design expert, and the two of them paired really well. And so they formed Unlimited Tech Solutions, which is a RevOps consultancy focused exclusively on the HubSpot platform. Tom also lives in Florida with his kids and probably a view of the beach at some point that he would rub in my face. He's also a good friend, a client, and I'm excited to have him on. Welcome, Tom.
Welcome, Kenny. And that was the most amazing intro I've ever heard. So kudos to you. Kudos to you. We're off to an awesome start.
I'm getting a little bit better with every episode. Just the enthusiasm, some ad-libbing. I try to keep it fun. So that's what we're here to do. Well, Tom, tell me, what is on your mind?
Well, what is on my mind? That's always a good question. Lots of things from time to time with that intro. Let me start there because it'll kind of get you into what's on my mind. I feel like Peter Griffin on the, you know, it really grinds my gears. no, just
he kidding. Said it. He said the phrase.
He said the phrase. What's on my mind? What is on my mind would be, in hearing my intro that you just read, right, where it's like, oh, Tom was tinkering and pushing RevOps. Not really. You know, I mean, yes, but you know really why we started it, and it's what's on my mind, is it's too much guruism out there in the marketplace. Yeah, I saw a LinkedIn post the other day that said something about, I'm going to paraphrase this, and I might mess it up, but it said something about how it's more valuable to be creative than it is to do good work. And I was reading all the comments, and there was overwhelming support for that sentiment. And I might have messed up the quote, but I couldn't disagree more. Right? There's a lot of these business gurus and these weekend warriors who, you know, wrote a book or read a book. And, you know, they got the 7-point formula, you know, for success. And what's on my mind is I really find it refreshing when I run into other business leaders who simply focus on doing good work. It's just really, really understanding their work product, really being passionate about their work product, and just doing good work. And for all the podcasts and books and posts out there, yeah, it's like a 1-page book. Do good work. Tell people about it.
Marketing.
That's it. That's it. Podcast over. Podcast over. That's it.
Bam. We're done. That's it. All right. So I think everybody will appreciate their time back. didn't even finish their warm up or their workout. So what, apart from being passionate, what does good work mean to you? And what are you seeing in terms of, because obviously there's a lot of people doing a lot of work, and maybe not all of it's crappy, but it seems like there's a particular brand of work that your statement is meant to oppose.
Not necessarily. It's about authenticity. So I'm gonna share some behind the curtain stuff here on the podcast. So when Kenny and I were just getting ready to start the podcast, his statement to me was, people need to be able to get something out of this podcast. If they don't take something away or make a change or do something different to benefit their lives, then why, I'm going to paraphrase, you know, but why even do it? Why even listen? That's what I mean by good work. Like, how are you benefiting somebody? How are you serving somebody? Is somebody better off today because you came to work? Is somebody better off today because of something you invented? Have you helped or make somebody's life better because of what you have provided? Right. And so that's what I mean by good work. You know, everybody is here for a reason. Everybody has something to contribute. And when you find that thing, you know, you find that passion, you find that authenticity, and man, don't lose that focus. It's so easy to lose that focus. You know, you had a bad quarter, you had a bad month, you got bills to pay, right? You read some get rich quick book about, you know, the world's easiest funnel to make you rich over the weekend type of book. and then, you know, you've got a great funnel with no actual product, with no actual work product. Whereas if you just are out there helping folks, doing good work, man, other things, you know, other things really line up behind you. So anyway,
That makes me think of a quote, and I know you love Southernisms, or at least pretending that I love Southernisms. But
I enjoy your Southernisms as you speak them, just because they're hilarious to me.
So one that actually came to mind, and what you're saying is a lot of the here's seven quick ways to make $1 million in the next 72 hours sort of stuff is. We might say that there are all hat and no cattle.
I like that. I like that.
It's a good one. Yeah. Right. Like, you're dressed up like you're a rancher, but you live in a one bedroom apartment. You don't actually have any land and you don't have any cattle. There's nothing behind it. You know, a more common one might be, you know, it's like all sizzle and no steak. Like, yeah, nothing wrong with dressing like a cowboy or having some sizzle. But I think what I hear you saying is, first, make sure there's an actual steak on the plate. Like, make sure the thing that matters is there. If you want to dress up like a cowboy, if you want to have some sizzling fajitas coming out, whatever the smoke is, fine. But just make sure you've got the thing that is actually most important there first. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, another thing I was reading the other day, which I really liked, and I'll try not to butcher it, but it was talking about founder CEOs, and it just said, you know, you should be doing three things, you know, talking to customers, building your product, and building your team. And I'm like, wow, well said, right? And just really, and so the one I'm talking about, at least where I opened with anyway, is really that product. Like, what's the product? Yeah. Right? So, in all transparency, I don't know if Kenny already mentioned this, I forgot, but you know, we're a client of Kenny's and we're on S2. And, right. So that work product, I reached out to him. You know, we've been in business a little over 2 years and, reached out to him in December when we really started growing, because I knew he was starting his business and I know him personally. And it was basically like, hey man, I'm drowning. Yeah, you know, we're growing. We got all this stuff happening. You know, I need a way to be able to put it together. I need a way to organize it, right? Which is really that build the team piece. At least it was for us. At least it was for when I reached out, because I had the talking to customers part down, and the product was coming along, right? So I didn't have a lot of concerns there. But boy, I didn't know where to start on the team, and you know, working with you and putting that stuff in place. It's been what, 6 months? Feels like a year, you know, but it's been about 6 months. And man, we got people in the right place doing the right things, and things are really, really going well. But the one I just kind of opened with, and again, I'm not going to say I'm some kind of guru or business advisor or anything in that front. It's just a lot of folks are always looking for the quick fix, and you know, in the next big thing, And that's fine. I'm not no judgment, but just make sure that the work product, yeah, maybe a little, but the work product is good. That's all. Just because there's so many things I see out there, and even if you find a quick fix, it's not gonna last unless you got a good product. Unless you got a good product, and I include service in product when I use that.
Sure. Name. So, what do you hear and what have you observed in terms of the thinking? I mean, there is the get rich quick, which I think probably catches more eyes. It's the Instagram entrepreneur. You know, you maybe rented a Ferrari for the day, took a few pictures and said, you know, I will teach you to be rich. And that's not me hitting out at that book or anything like that, but that's sort of the vibe they give off. But are there other ways in which people are thinking about business that isn't putting their product, their service, the main thing, the I'm here to help people. What else is getting in the way of people starting with how can I help?
Yeah. As far as getting away or removing obstacles, let me say it this way. Let me say, if the goal is to feel stable, to have peace, to have harmony, to feel grounded, to feel like you're making a contribution to the world, you know, to really have those aspects, money's a part of that. You know, money will flow. Mm-hmm. To where it, you know, it needs to. If that's the goal, I think you need to build your house on a foundation. And I believe mm-hmm. the foundation in everybody's different way, the foundation ultimately is going to be one of service. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be evident in your motives. If your motives are service, and in whatever way, mm-hmm. that's going to be a strong foundation that you're going to be able to build your skills on, build your products on, and mm-hmm. service can mean anything. You know, service can mean anything. But if your motive is, and again, this is going to sound judgmental, but if your motive is, I just want millions of dollars, period.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure people listening are going to be like, "Well, I got examples though," and that's fine. But my experience is when you put the motive first and you're building on a strong foundation, I want to build a good product. I'm passionate about this thing that I do. Right. That everything else will fall in alignment to support that. That's kind of the
gotcha.
That's been my experience.
Yeah, because I don't think you're saying that making money or making millions is wrong or
no,
bad.
No, don't.
Or that happens. Shouldn't be there.
That's the natural outcome.
But that's the outcome as opposed to the motivation behind the work. Because it's not a very compelling why. It's not, at least not for.
Money motives aren't bad either. I'm not saying money motives aren't.
No, not at all.
It's the shortcuts that I see people just tripping up on themselves. So anyway, that's when you ask kind of what's on my mind. That's what's on my mind, because that's what I got a few folks in my life, you know, that I know personally that kind of got tripped up into that type of thing. And so it was kind of fresh on my mind there.
Yeah, especially if you're good at sales, whether you're a founder or you're just a sales rep or something like that, it can be easy to get tripped up by that because you're making sales. And so it's like, well, how much more can I make regardless if you really care about what you're doing, what you're selling, you know, how it gets serviced on the back end, right? Which I know is a huge point of priority for you and your work is can my team deliver on what I just sold, what I just promised, right? That there's an integrity, not in the we value integrity and honesty sort of way, but integrity meaning there's a oneness that I said what we were going to do and we did what I said, sort of integrity, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, something that you mentioned about our work together regarding system and soul and those three things, which I think are fantastic. And maybe we should rewrite the visionary seat in your org chart with just those three things. But you talked about the team piece. From my experience as a founder and working with others, is talking to the customer typically not the most difficult thing in the world. They're usually on the front lines. They're there. They're personable, you know, those sorts of things. But I do think that that building a team piece seems to be elusive in some cases. And I'm curious, not that we have to go through your entire resume. I mean, we'll link up your LinkedIn profile if somebody really wants to go check that out. But you've worked with many different teams over the course of your career in different sectors and different purposes, large, small, all those sorts of things. What was different in being a founder trying to build a team as opposed to sitting in one of those executive positions that you've held and building a team?
Well, that's an awesome question.
That's why I get paid the medium dollars.
That's right. That's why you make dozens of dollars. That's right. That is a big difference, right? So I spent more than a decade, you know, in executive positions, leading teams, mostly on the sales and the marketing side. And that was different. I was telling a friend the other day, you know, now it's been a couple of years where, you know, I've been leading an organization, you know, and we've been growing nicely. I was telling somebody the other day, I said, boy, did my understanding of what leadership is change. Right? Boy, has that changed. I'm a big movie quote, movie reference guy. And I said, he goes, what do you mean? And I said, I used to think leadership was Mel Gibson in Braveheart, that's when I was in those executive roles. That's what it was. It was that inspiration. Yeah, we're going to do the thing. And, you know, we go do the thing and never, yay, woo. And as a founder CEO role, I've learned leadership is more about it's time to make the donuts. If you remember that Dunkin' Donuts commercial from the 90s, you know, we're every morning at 4 a.m., he's just like, well, it's time to make the donuts, like every morning, rain, snow, shine. And it really is. Let me say it another way. When I started, I thought the CEO was at the top of the organization. Mm-hmm. And you may draw it that way. It's not really the experience. It's really the foundation upon which you build your team. You're the foundation, and there is an element of service needed. Mm. It's not something you can choose to. It's needed. You serve your team to make sure they have what they need to execute your vision. Every minute of every day, you are keeping a pulse on who needs me. Where am I needed? Where am I needed? How can I serve? And not from some altruistic point of view. I'm talking very practically, very practically. Because sometimes they need Mel Gibson and Braveheart, charging, you know, with, sometimes they need you to listen. Sometimes they need to yell at you. Sometimes they need to vent about a customer or a situation. Sometimes they need somebody to help solve a problem. You're the Swiss Army knife of service.
Why do you think that that's not something that comes to mind or is understood easily, especially for people who, like yourself, served in executive roles, even all the way up to and including, you know, COO? Like, that's second in command, about to be the CEO. Like, what is it?
Second's different than first, though.
It is. My pastor, who moved from executive pastor to lead pastor, took over after the founder, which is always like a really tedious sort of move in any organization, including churches. And the way that he says it is, when he was sitting in that second seat, he thought that the distance between their chairs was like, you know, 6 feet, you know, it could reach over or slide over and touch it. He goes, I figured out it wasn't 6 feet. It were measured in feet. It was measured in miles.
I completely agree with that.
Why do you think that is? And how did that reality hit you? Like, because you didn't have to choose. And obviously we've seen, whether on, you know, Instagram or LinkedIn or something else, a ton of founder CEOs aren't choosing service as you've described it. They're choosing a different method.
I'll tell on myself here. When I started this company, I'd spent a lot of time in corporate, and it was, mm-hmm. it was hard, grueling work. Making other people rich, working other people's schedules, seeing amazing ideas get killed in the boardroom and never seeing the light of day, right? And there was a lot of frustration. And when Cornet and I started this, and Cornet had similar backgrounds, right? I reached out to him, and I'm just like, we just wanted to do good work with good people. And let me tell you what my mindset was at the time, where I was like, we just want to do good work with good people. And I'll speak for myself only with this. I think it's true for him, but I won't speak for him. Speaking for myself only, I'm like, you know what? This is going to be lovely. Be able to have some freedom, set my own schedules, you know, build a nice business that'll help with like the financial aspect, right? Like there was this, you know, and I'll be working for myself, right? So, you know, no more bad bosses, you know, all that type of stuff is what got me through the door. Yeah. And then the door closes behind you and you realize there's no door handle that you can't open it up again. Right. And then you're like, yeah. Oh, this is harder than I thought it was. And I knew it'd be hard. It was harder than that. And there's a realignment. There's a realignment that takes place. And I know this is true for other founders because we've talked about it. There's a realignment where you're like, oh, this isn't quite what I thought. I'm liking it. It's just different. Mm-hmm. It's just different. And I had to give up those false perceptions of what being a founder and leader was going to be in exchange for something much different. But outside of being a father, it's the most enriching thing I've done. It's just nothing like I imagined. It's just nothing like I imagined. The responsibility, the service that's required, you know, it's not glamorous. It is not glamorous. It seemed from the outside, it seemed very glamorous. It is the exact opposite of glamorous. Exact opposite. Yeah. It's very enriching. Don't get me wrong. It's very enriching. I love what I do. I love the clients that we help. I love the seeing my team grow and thrive and have successes. But you know what? I see them grow and thrive and I get to celebrate them from the back of the room. And again, that's not what I thought it was going to be coming in. I like where it's at, but it's just much different. It's just much different.
What do you think could help people make that transition? Because like you have the realization and you can go as basic as there's, you know, pleasure seeking, pain avoidant, right? And it sounds like you entered a place that was, you know, a lot more painful than you previously had thought. When I talk about it, you know, whether it was you or I or in a presentation or something else, is a lot of entrepreneurs get into business for themselves or start something because they see it as a path to freedom. They end up feeling like they were in a prison of their own making, which is really frustrating, right? Because you have no one else to blame. You can't blame it on a bad boss. You can't point at this, that, and the other thing. It's like, it's your company. Who else are you going to go to?
And you know what, right? Though? That was true. And I'm going to give you a compliment here. That was true. And I did accept responsibility because it was a prison of my own making. And I understood I needed help. And that's when I reached out to you, because I knew you had some skills to be able to help me put things together to get out of it. it's been 6 months, right? And those of you that know, like, you know, whatever the founder life cycle, whatever, you know, I'm about two and a half years, you know, I guess two, it's about 2 years in. And so, you know, it changes, but in 6 months, I do not feel like I am in prison anymore. I did.
What
because
changed?
I feel like I have some agency in decisions. I have some agency in direction. I have agency in how the team is shaped and formed. Before I was just being bombarded with environmental things that were happening, and I don't feel that way anymore. Now there's still a lot of work.
Sure.
But the vehicle is responding to the direction versus I was rolling down a hill uncontrollably. Whereas now it's just like, oh, got it. I'm learning to drive the car now. Right. And so there is some fun. Don't hear me say it's not fun. It's absolutely fun. Right. We're going up against, companies that are bigger than us and winning. I just got a call just before, I got on here, and, we just won a pretty big contract, with someone we've been working with or trying to win for a while. And, was up against three other companies, significantly larger, than us.
Wow.
And,
fantastic. Congrats.
Yeah. So anyway, bye. But yeah, the role of leadership changed and just the view of it, but it's been very, very enriching. You know, prison of my own making. Yes. But you can get out of your own prison too, 'cause you made it.
Yeah. I was at, Dave Ramsey and a lot of the Entree Leadership stuff. And I know everybody has their different opinion there. So set that aside and like chew up the meat, spit out the bone. There's you another good, Southernism, but, I think it's Southern. It sounds like it, is he goes, the bad thing is, or the negative thing about being a business owner is you're the problem, but the good news is you're also the solution. Right? Like you built the prison, you can also unlock the, you know, the cell and get out. But that can feel weighty at times because you're like, well, all of my thinking got me here. How am I going to think myself out of a problem I thought myself into? Which I think kind of speaks to you having that moment of, I've got to go outside the boundaries of myself and maybe even the company, because obviously you have a co-founder who has previous entrepreneurial experience, but and it took y'all to a place like it wasn't y'all were struggling and needed a lifeline, but it was almost like a runaway rocket at the point, you know, you and I were talking
without a rudder, you know, on it.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a degree of humility that's needed. There's a degree of arrogance and confidence needed to start a business, you know, not in a bad way, but, you know, like, wow, I'm so good at this. I'm going to start a business. Right.
Right.
But that doesn't apply in every category of the business. Right.
Right. So, eventually that has to wear off. Right. And something else replaces it.
Or for me, having an organized system or having the ways to like run the meetings and get the roadmap and get the metrics in place and make sure that is not something that I excel at. Right. Some of the stuff that's part of our work product, I do excel at, which is why I had the confidence to start the business. Like, wow, I'm really good at this talent or skill. I should start a business. But I needed to, I remember the voice memo I sent you was just before Christmas because we were off. Yeah. And I sent you a voice memo because you'd been, you know, communicating with me, letting me know what you were doing. And I was resistant. And I was just like, all right, man, I'm drowning. I know you're off for Christmas. Let's meet the first of the year. But I need help, man. I'm like, I need help. And that's, I know some people find it's hard to do sometimes to be like, hey, I need some help in this area.
Yeah, I definitely paddle in that boat. It's sort of like a running joke with some people that I'm around. And, you know, I'll tease about it, but there's always a kernel of truth in it. It's like, you know, I despise needing other people. but truth be told, like there's so much in my life that's good that wouldn't be there if I was just trying to carry it all on my own.
And that's the opposite end of service, is being able to be humble enough to accept the service of others.
Yeah, which is a tough thing because it can be easy to hide behind, let me just serve you, do this, is it's a nice way to keep people at arm's length.
That's right. That's called codependent.
Or just suffering in silence.
Yeah.
Something I was going to ask, and at the risk of it seeming self-serving to the listener, but I want to point out that, previously where you and I had intersected, we were exposed to something similar or in the same category of business frameworks as sure. System and Soul. And you had other team members
I can talk about that. You want me to talk about that?
Well, yes, but maybe here's my tee up and then you can take it wherever you want, which will be fun, I'm sure. But the thing I'm asking is there is that, well, I'm making things happen, right? You had already been going, a year and a half or so by the time you reached out around Christmas time, but you had exposure. There are books. There are things that you can go that will give you almost a step-by-step on here's how you implement X, Y, and Z, and you go about it, and here's the templates, and here's the stuff. You had that exposure, yet chose not to try to do it all in-house, or maybe you did. I know that there's more stories linked there, which are at your discretion to share, but why not just get a book off the shelf? It sure as hell is a lot less expensive than hiring me, $20 on a book to go through versus hiring an outside person, whether it was me or someone else.
So let me
I'm bracing.
Ask some rhetoricals. There's no question that America has problems with obesity. Do you think that we have a problem with obesity because there's a lack of information about what makes you fat?
No.
Do you think there's a problem with teenage pregnancy because there's they don't have enough information about what causes pregnancy?
Right? No, I think we're good on info right? And educational materials.
So it's not a lack of information. It is the implementation of said information or the ability to actually get the outcome that you want. Right. Or I'm going to quote, I'm a movie quote guy, or there's that scene in Liar Liar with Jim Carrey when he can't lie and his secretary goes, your client's on the phone. He's in jail again. What should I tell him? And he grabs the phone and he goes, quit breaking the law, asshole. Right.
Yeah.
Right. So
as one of my employees used to say, it ain't rocket surgery.
That's right. So it's not just information. It's not just having, it's not what you know. It's what you can get done. It's not what you know. It's what you can get done. I couldn't get it done. You could give me the blueprint. I couldn't get it done. Could I try to get it done? Sure. How many times am I going to try to get it done before I admit it's not getting done? I need help to get it done because it is not getting done. Right. And so it's not the, I'm going to tell you, I love, you love my dad's quotes. So, here's a good one, and hopefully this is rated R so I can curse. My dad used to say, wish in one hand and shit in the other and see which gets filled first. So I say that. So when I reached out to you in December and if people are trying to self-implement, dude, look yourself in the mirror and just ask, am I actually going to get this done? And if I want to try to self-implement, how many months am I going to give myself before I'm going to be able to look myself in the mirror and be honest and say, it ain't working. It's not working. Because you hire people for the outcome. You hire people for the outcome. Yeah. You're paying for the years, not for the time. Right? And then you measure on outcomes. If you're getting the outcomes you want, what was that worth to you. And if you're not getting the outcomes you want because you did it yourself or whatever, maybe you got a bad implementer. If you're not getting the outcomes you want, stop doing that, right? Quit breaking the law, right? Like, stop doing it. It's not working. It's not working. Mm-hmm. Try something different.
Yeah.
So.
No, that's good. And I know it's a trap because I've fallen into it myself of I'm a smart guy. I'm making things work. I'm that's learning right. and I'm implementing and I'm getting stuff done and it's just popping. But eventually your brain only has so much space and you only have so much time. And as you mentioned, like as the business grows, you get bombarded, like you sort of work for everybody else, you know, your team, your clients, and where are you going to hold this space? I know I've done better when I've had just athletically, when I've had a coach, somebody that's outside. Right. There's a great book. It's on web design or just like UI UX for web applications or something. It's called Don't Make Me Think.
Yes. I own it and the sequel to that book.
And that's been in different areas. So like lately or this year, I've taken up, you know, competing in triathlons and that sort of training. But it was made easier because I had a friend who had done it who said, I'll coach you. I'll put together your training plan. I didn't have to think about anything. I just had to go out and move my body for the period of time and at the intensity. And now, you know, I have an app that does that. But if I'm paying though, like this app for the outcome of what it says it can make me do, because I probably could sit down and figure it out. I've been doing sports long enough, right? But that could be anything for any founder or any business leader is you probably could. Do you have the time? Which, as we all know, is one of our only non-renewable resources is at the a phrase I heard, I don't know who said it, but the highest and best use of your time. And those things become more and more narrow to the point of where they really are. I think that's what that author was saying about those three things, right?
Yeah.
Which is the things that only you as a founder can do are far more narrow than you as a VP, you as a director, you as a, you know, a frontline worker or a mid-level manager, right?
Yeah. And again, it boils down to really being the observer of yourself and being honest with yourself, about, is it getting done? I'll tell you something, you know, that's embarrassing about myself. I have a virtual assistant that I meet with three times a week in the morning because I have a really hard time logging my time entries and checking on some of my tasks and some other. It's the easiest thing in the world, but it wasn't getting done. And so now I have a 15-minute appointment on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays where I sit there like I'm an infant and go through my homework with mommy and daddy and make sure my lunch. But you know what? It gets done now. And it took me 2 months before I was like open to the idea. Cause I'm like, it should be right. If you hear the word should coming out of your mouth, if you're observing yourself, should or could or what. Right. And so anyway, so I did that. Every time I meet, I'm a little embarrassed at the beginning. Cause I'm like, I should be able to do this.
Right.
I should be able to do this. I am a smart grown man. I'm 43 years old. I should be able to look at my calendar and transfer it over into the program about, you know, the client work that I did, but it wasn't getting done. And now it is, period. Right. And that's really what we manage for, you know, when it comes back to the work, product, or services, what is the outcome and what needs to happen to get the outcome that you need, that you want.
Yeah. So in thinking through, because obviously I start all these conversations sort of abstractly, and usually the thread emerges, but I'd be curious your take, given what you've said about outcomes, is being that outcomes are what we pay for. That's what we're geared towards. That's what we complain about when we write negative Google, Yelp, Amazon reviews is we didn't get what we paid for. But we think that way as a buyer. But when we're a business leader or an organizational leader, and maybe even more especially a founder, co-founder, why do you think people can't make that mental leap to being outcome focused and say, well, this isn't the path I thought I would take to get to this outcome, or this isn't the way I thought I would do things to achieve this outcome? Like, you didn't think you would need, you know, 3 meetings a week with a virtual assistant to make sure you logged your time and did these things, even though you helped come up with the idea, you saw the value of it, you said it was good, but even that took you 2 months before you got there. What's stopping up founders and leaders from doing that? I have my own thoughts, but I'm curious on yours.
I'll share autobiographically, just so, because that's really the perspective that I have. I think the answer is in the question. What is stopping me from focusing on the outcomes? Right? Hmm. Ask yourself that. What is stopping me? And if you are able to ask yourself that and not to start rushing into solutions, really marinate in it. What is stopping me? What is stopping me from focusing on the outcomes? And as you're doing that, you know, keep a check on like your inner space too, and just be like, you might feel some resistance. You might feel like you'll feel some kind of emotion. Maybe it's I think it's different for everybody. You know, sometimes for me it's situational. You know, maybe it's like I'm feeling like I need to control it. Is that true?
Yeah.
Do I need to? Right? Is that true? No, I don't. Am I open? Am I open to letting it go? What would my life be like if I did let that go? Right? Mm-hmm. But really being objective about it and doing some self-inquiry around what is stopping me from focusing on the outcomes. That's one aspect. And then the other aspect that I find with myself, and this has been this way, and you've known me for years, so I know you know this is true, being able to reinvent yourself often, right? Hmm. So we go through cycles of creating something, maintaining something, and then dismantling it or destroying it, and then recreating something, maintaining something, and dismantling and destroying it. I find, at least in my life, it's about every 6 months or so, there's some aspect of me that has served its purpose and now needs to be dismantled, understood, and go away. And then, nature abhors a vacuum, right? So now that there's space, now I have room to grow into a new understanding or grow into a new appreciation and grow into. And so if I'm coming off of, so like just looking at a 2-year founder journey, the first year, very different than the second year, unrecognizably different. The people, the processes, the way of thinking, even the product itself, it was very different in that first year. And then we went through, this create, maintain, you know, destroy, about a year ago. And when we did, some of our team changed as well.
Yeah.
Right. Cause it's like, okay, we're reinventing, we're becoming something new and going into the S2 stuff, people change seats change, organization change. You know, you're constantly reshuffling and moving. And then you go. And when you find yourself getting stuck again, like, shit, stuff's not working, or why is this so difficult now? It didn't used to be difficult. What's going on? What about this? You know, do I need to look at something? Do I need to release something? Do I need to let something go? And then you have to actively participate in taking that down. You have to be like, oh, I'm still thinking in the way that I was 2 years ago when I was in a different role or in a different company or in a different situation. Okay, that's not serving me anymore, you see? So that's my take on it.
Yeah, it really is. You need to think differently in order to lead differently, because the demands of your current situation are different than they were previously, even if you're in the same seat, you know?
But right? You got to want to lead differently before you can even start the process, because if you think you got it all figured out, then you're right.
I completely agree with what you said. I think you've hit on several good things. I think one of the things, at least, again, autobiographical, I think one of the things for me, and I think probably was an arrogance, but I choose the word precious. I was being precious about the way I thought my business, my first one, was supposed to be run. I was precious about how I thought leadership was supposed to look like. I was precious about what the harmony and balance of work to family to outside enjoyment and all of those things. And most, if not all, of my real problems that persisted. I'm not going to say, because you're always going to have problems, or as we call them in S2, opportunities. But the ones that persisted, that, you know, might show up on that weekly sync opportunities list repeatedly, which they're not supposed to.
That's right.
Those were all ones where I was being precious about the process instead of being focused on the outcome and say, okay, this isn't working. It was the insanity, you know, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. Is I was insane and I drove my team insane. And it's when I detached from what's the journey there. And like you said, is what are my expectations? What am I holding on to that's no longer helping me? And that's the tricky part, right? It may have previously helped you, which I think, and that takes me into a whole other topic.
It blows your mind because it's the thing that you needed. And so you hold it precious. But it's not serving you anymore, right? I had a friend use this example, and she said, if you are driving a car from New York to California, and it was a hard, long road trip, but you made it, and now you're on that beach, and you know, you're very proud of the journey and the car that you drove in and all the things, but you can't go any further with the car. Now you need scuba gear and a boat. You got to leave the car. Unless you're James Bond. But then you got to leave the car. You got to leave it. There's nothing to do.
Good.
You see?
Yeah. So I think probably one of the biggest things that I've heard you say throughout the whole conversation, I think you could boil down, is self-awareness.
And being the observer of self is the key to that.
Yeah. What I've heard some other teachers, you and I have had our discussions about Enneagram, and some of the stuff that I'm interested there is a phrase that I like that came from an Enneagram teacher I was listening to, was non-judgmental self-observation.
Perfect.
Is just, what's the reality? Establish reality. You don't have to judge. There doesn't need to be guilt and shame. You don't need gold stars, but you also don't need like black and gray dots on yourself, you know, to like, oh, this is a mistake. This is a mistake. It's just what is happening right now? What am I holding on to? What am I holding precious? Or what do I believe worked before? And I'm trying to make it work again, but everything's really different. If I were to pause for even a moment and consider that.
And does it serve me? Who would I be without it? And a lot of these questions, just so I can cite the sources, there's a book, Byron Katie, Loving What Is. So some of these questions, just to properly cite the source, but you know, is this true? Yeah. You know, do I need it? Who would I be without it?
Yeah. We'll make sure she gives you a royalty. But so I guess my final question, which I ask on every episode, and to make good on the promise we talked about, at the top of the show, is, what are people going to do differently? So if you're sitting down, one of these listeners, they're a leader, maybe they're experienced, maybe they're not, but they hear this, okay, I need to have self-observation, not judgmentally. Is it serving me? Evaluate. Like, what that can feel like, whoa, I've never stepped into that. I don't meditate, man. Like, I'm not into that. But what is a first step in the next 24 hours? Someone could take a step. They don't have to master it all at once, but just take a step. What advice would you give, or what direction would you give?
I do think it boils down to being the observer of self, right? Mm-hmm. If you're not in love with everything about your experience right now as a human being, just start observing yourself. You don't need to journal it if you don't want to. I find it's helpful, but just be curious, to quote Ted Lasso, right? Just be curious about yourself. Just be your observer. Just question, is it true? Is it true? Right? Because then you'll start to see things. You'll start to see more things. And when you walk into a dark room and you turn on the light, you see more things. And that's really worth what that just being observant. You'll have questions, and that's good. That's good, because mm-hmm. that's really what's going to help you kind of uncover what you need to uncover, right? You're not trying to become somebody else. You're just trying to become authentically you, who you really are. Be curious about yourself, and that's how you're going to be able to see what you need to see, so you can grow where you need to go.
Boom. Mic drop. Except I'm not going to drop it, because those things are expensive. Tom, this has been fantastic. I'm sure there's like 37 more conversations that we could or should have. But if people want to get a hold of you or learn more about what you're doing or are interested in or Unlimited, where would you send them?
Sure. They go to our website, unlimitedtechsolutions.com, and check out what awesome. We're doing.
And there will be a link in the notes and every description or whatever the right term is there for Tom's LinkedIn profile. So he's a great follow, and then you start following the things he's following. So you can start to pick up on some of the sources he's citing today. But I appreciate you coming by. This was a great conversation. And remember, until next time, if you want to lead differently, think differently. We'll see you.